Thanks for tuning in to Marketing Mythbusters. When all marketers sound the same, it becomes necessary for one voice to rise above the crowd. An unbiased voice that filters through the fluff and exposes the insider secrets and sales tactics marketers don't want you to know about. Here's that voice, David Melamed.
Hi, I'm David Melamed, and welcome to Marketing Mythbusters, my new podcast where I help dispel some of the myths, invalidate the lore, and just get rid of the fluff and focus on what truly matters when it comes to digital marketing. All I hear from friends and clients today is all marketers sound exactly the same to me. I have no idea who to listen to. What they say makes sense to me, but how do I know it's really going to work for me? People are really confused, and there's just so much information. When I got involved with digital marketing, there's maybe 10,000 digital marketers on the planet, maybe less, maybe more. I don't know the number, but it couldn't have been a significant number. Today, there must be millions. And every single millennial who's decent with a computer can suddenly be a social media marketer and an influencer. And it's really difficult to navigate and know who to trust and know who to listen to. And more importantly, know where and how to allocate your resources. This is a very tough challenge, and I feel like I'm uniquely qualified to help you navigate those waters because I've been burnt enough times, I've learned enough hard lessons, and I've driven enough successes and enough failures for my clients over the years that really gives me some perspective. Just to add to that, my experience spans agencies, client side, my own businesses, and as an outside consultant. So I've kind of worn all the different hats when it comes to the types of interactions you'll experience with digital marketing. And there's certain stories that matter that people have to really understand. There's a foundation. And when you have that foundation, it leads to clarity around all these decisions. So my hope is to lay out this foundation and this framework for how to think about investing in marketing. And hopefully that will be good enough for you to navigate the proposals you get from different companies, know what you could trust, know what you can't trust, and hopefully it'll help you be a better marketer, a better entrepreneur, help you grow your business in a sustainable way and in a responsible way. I fell in love with marketing when I was a little kid. Probably it goes back to watching the Super Bowl when I was about 5 or 6 years old. I didn't grow up in a home with a television, rather sheltered, religious. In that experience, watching the Super Bowl was pretty much one of the few times I was allowed to watch TV. I still watched lots of TV where I wasn't allowed, but that was one of the times I was allowed. And the reason why it was allowed was, aside from it just being sports, my father had an issue with commercials more than sports. He saw a commercial where a father told his kids he's taking them to get ice cream, and instead he took them to the dentist, and he thought television commercials teach you to lie. And he didn't want his kids exposed to that. In retrospect, he might not have been wrong about that. But I remember the day after the Super Bowl and the evening of the Super Bowl, all anybody was talking about was the commercials. And I think at that point I realized people seem to respect people that write funny and awesome and memorable commercials. So I would love one day to write memorable commercials. I don't know if that's what led to my career path. You know, I was very involved with technology from a very early age. I was using the internet as early as 1993, logging onto bulletin board systems, racking up long distance bills. So I taught myself web development in 1999 while I was in high school. I wasn't very good at it at the time, but I think I was kind of pigeonholed into this opportunity just because, you know, I was one of the very early people to use technology and computers at home and the internet. And on top of that, I had this admiration for copywriting and for marketing. I also almost pathologically like to help people learn about things they don't know about. There's something inside me that just drives me nuts when I see someone taking advantage of someone else's ignorance. And the idea of helping people be educated consumers, the idea to be a consumer advocate, to help people know who to trust and what to trust. There's something about me, I don't know where it comes from, but it's deeply, deeply ingrained in me to the point where I probably give away so much free marketing advice to clients, friends, prospects, just because there's just something about it that just gives me meaning. And I'm hoping to use this podcast as a platform to help you navigate these waters and be a more educated consumer, a better educated consumer when it comes to digital marketing. I hear this over and over again from people that all marketers sound the same to them. They all say something that makes sense. It sounds like it should work. But for some reason, if you ask people what their experiences are with marketing agencies and with marketing consultants, more often than not, they're unhappy. And the experience usually boils down to over-promising, under-delivering. I have this theory that one of the best ways to find unique selling propositions is to look for what complaints people are using in your marketplace, in your industry. If you understand what people are complaining about when it comes to your competitors, that's customers telling you exactly what they want. And so I went to Yelp and I filtered PPC agencies, marketing agencies by one-star reviews. And I read through them. And the pattern I saw that emerged over and over and over again was agencies overpromising and under-delivering. And I don't think it's malicious, and I don't think these agencies are necessarily even bad at what they do. I think that there's a lot of people involved with marketing that are extremely passionate about it. And I think passion translates in an emotional way. When you feel like someone cares deeply about something and you hear that passion in their voice, you want to trust it, and you trust it. The problem is that more often than not, what they're passionate about is not based on actual activity knowledge. It's not based on actually executing successfully in multiple environments on these strategies. More often than not, it's them having some sort of insight or understanding and then reading a blog post or a case study that aligns with that and that sounds like it makes sense. And that translates to you and suddenly like, wow, that sounds like a great idea. Let's do it. And then it turns out, you don't know what obstacles you're going to face because they've actually never executed before. Now, there are many cases where they've executed and seen phenomenal results, and they're really great at what they do, but it just doesn't translate for your business. And why would that be? And there's obviously many, many reasons. And I think I'm going to try to lay out a foundation to figure this out and understand this, but I think there's a couple things we have to understand initially about human nature before we can even get to that point. And I'm hoping that this podcast is guided by these principles. And the first one is always being open to the idea that you might be wrong. When I say you, I mean me. So I have, you know, a decade of experience in digital marketing. I've had my finger on the levers managing over $25 million in paid search advertising, well over $1 million in SEO budgets. I grew a business from scratch to 70 plus employees, over $1 million a month in profits on the back of search engine marketing. I've worked in companies like New York Film Academy, where we ran campaigns in 8 different countries and dozens of languages. My experience spans a wide range of areas. But if there's one thing I've learned over and over and over again, it's that the more I learned, the more I realized, the less I knew. The more I know, the less I know. I know there's kind of, it's ironic a little bit, but there's something about being open-minded that's crucial, absolutely crucial, if you want to be growing your business and investing in marketing. Because as much as we have this idea of perfect data and big data and understanding consumers and running tests, the reality is that the world is way more complex than we ever realized. And no data is ever going to tell the whole story. It's just not possible. Science will never be able to answer every question. Data is never going to be able to tell you everything that's going on with your customers. All it can do is help you eliminate things that aren't true and help focus you on areas that are more likely to be true and more likely to work, essentially stacking the odds in your favor. And that's really what knowledge does. What I'm trying to get at with this is I'm going to sound somewhat self-assured about things I say, and I believe a lot of these things wholeheartedly, but I try my hardest to be aware of the fact that I have biases, and some of those biases are out of my control. So I'll just give you an example. You have certain biases that are built on a foundation, right? So the best example I could think of this is when I got started in SEO, probably in about 2006, and digital marketing, I read a blog post. I don't know, maybe it was on Aaron Wall's blog, or maybe it was, and where did Aaron Wall go? I haven't heard his name in like 7-8 years, and he was so instrumental in what I know today. I really should figure out where in the world Aaron Wall is. But anyway, I read some blog post somewhere that basically said, when you're running advertising in search engines specifically, it was talking about AdWords, when your ad has 1,000 impressions, then you have statistically significant data to know which way to trust your ad, or whether one ad beat out the other with statistical significance. That foundation has driven years and years of things I've done until eventually I realized that's not the case at all. And nowadays we obviously have tools that can tell us about confidence levels and statistical significance. And there's a lot of different things to test. Adalysis is one. Google built some native tools in there as well. But I had this foundation that I just believed, and I just applied it over and over and over again. And I think that there are a lot of marketers today that make anecdotal decisions on the fly based on their gut, based on what they think is true, without actually thinking, is this actually true? So that 1,000 number for statistical significance may have actually been true in certain circumstances, but it was by no means a law that should be applied to every account in every industry and every environment. The most obvious glaring issue with that is variance with day of the week and day of the month. If you want statistical significance, you gotta, I mean, you need at least a full week, right, to rule out the variance from day to day, different days of the week. And really, you want 28 days to rule out variance over the course of a month and rule out variance that comes from holidays and things like that. So, and again, I'm not a statistician. I'm not a data scientist. And I'm by no means the expert on marketing. My point is just that I read one thing, I accepted it as gospel, and there were so many things in the future that were built on that foundation, and there was a faulty foundation, and that's a problem. So the first thing is recognizing and understanding that there's going to be all sorts of perceptions I have and foundations on what I have to share that may be built on faulty foundation. And if you catch me saying something that you disagree with, please speak up. Let's talk it out. Comment on the website, marketingmythbusters.fm. Reach out to me via email. For now, it's david@davidmalama.com. In the future, I might change that to david@marketingmythbusters.fm. We'll see how that goes. We'll see if I can get my hands on marketingmythbusters.com. The fellow who owns it is a very nice guy, plans on doing something with it. So he wasn't really interested in selling it. But anyway, for now, that's how you'll reach me, david@davidmalama.com or marketingmythbusters.fm. So that's the first thing, is recognizing that we have certain biases, certain perceptions that are built on a foundation that's not necessarily true. And this goes to any marketer you're going to listen to anywhere. The first thing you have to ask yourself is, where are some of these biases? Now, I just described to you a bias that's actually not the biggest concern. The biggest concern you're going to have when trusting other marketers is from sales bias, financial bias. Where do their incentives lie? We live in a world right now where blockchain and building a trustless economy is this dream that so many people have. They believe it's the biggest innovation of our time. And I'm not going to get into blockchain right now, but my point with this is that there's this huge, huge push towards a trustless environment. And I completely lost my train of thought on that point. Oh, well. But the point I'm trying to make with all of this is that if you understand the financial motivation of the person talking, you have the filter you need to know what to listen to and what to take with a grain of salt. And I'm going to address this significantly at length in multiple episodes. I hope to go through various sales tactics marketers use and various things that they might tell you that are influenced by their bias. And I'll just, the most obvious thing I can think of when it comes to me, and anytime you hear anything out of my mouth, you should ask yourself this question, which is, there's an expression and there's many different versions of this, and philosophers have used it in some context, but The version I like and know is, to a hammer, every problem is a nail. And I'm primarily a search marketer, which means that almost every customer acquisition problem I see, the first thing I think about is search. And in a future episode, I will talk about search at length and how I think about it. But it's important to recognize that if you come to me and you say, how do I grow my legal practice, or how do I grow my medical practice, or how do I grow my SaaS product? The first thing that's going to go through my head is, are people searching for this? Does the demand exist? And can we compete in that environment? And it's just because search is where I'm very proficient. And this is one of the problems you're going to face in the digital marketing world, is that every marketer out there is selling their flavor. My guess is any given company can probably succeed with well over 20 different acquisition strategies. Odds are most businesses are only trying maybe 3 at a time. Some of the bigger ones might have 5, but there's a lot of different ways that you could grow your business. And one of the biggest mistakes that are made today is choosing the wrong one to focus on. And you don't necessarily know the answer to that, right? But there's budget allocation, in my opinion, is the biggest opportunity in digital marketing today. There seems to be very little strategic focus about where to allocate budgets and how to allocate budgets. Sure, you have CMOs that are managing P&Ls, that are making decisions about how to allocate those budgets. But in terms of evaluating a specific opportunity, they're very rarely looking at how much opportunity are we missing in another channel that might be more successful. And that, to me, that's one of the big opportunities in digital marketing today. Again, that's not the focus. Right now, I really just want to get to this foundation, which is to outline the idea that bias exists no matter where you look. I might know that I'm biased towards search. I might know that I have other biases based on how I was raised, my experiences, etc. There are also cognitive biases, and this is maybe the most important point. If you never listen to me again, but you listen to this one point, this podcast would have been worth it. And I have to credit this to a book that the CIA commissioned called The Psychology of Intelligence Analysis. And if you really think about it, if you're a marketer and you're analyzing data, you know, you're not dealing with life and death decisions. You might be dealing with the livelihood of some people, which I guess is something that you should care deeply about, but you're not dealing with life and death. But when you're dealing with a CIA analyst out in the field trying to figure out if a state actor is being malicious or what they're trying to do, and you're working with imperfect information, you better be damn sure you understand how your mind is going to interpret information that you process. And that means you have to understand how your senses bring in information to your head, right? Your eyes, your ears, your nose, how your senses bring in information, how your mind, your short-term memory records that information, how it writes it to your long-term memory, how it recalls it, what that process is. And you don't have to be the scientist or understand the anatomy of it, but you have to understand the biases, the cognitive biases that limit the way you perceive these things. And one of the things that this book discusses in chapter 5, which is too much information bad? And the short answer is yes. And I know people don't like hearing this, but this is crucially important. What they did is they took a horse race with horse handicappers, the best in the world, and they basically randomized the data. So they took data from successful races, they stripped out information that would make it identifiable to the handicappers, and they basically asked them, what 5 data points would you consider to be the most important for you to make decisions handicapping these races? Now, bear in mind, choosing those 5 has some sort of bias there too, but we'll worry about that later. They gave those 5 pieces of information about these randomized races, and these handicappers made their predictions about who would have won and who would have lost. They then asked them, if you could have all the information in the world, what data points would you want to see? And they compiled a list of about 40 data points about these races. And again, different races. And they gave it to the handicappers to see their predictions. What ended up happening is their accuracy and predictions were almost exactly the same, whether they have 5 data points or 40 data points. But that's not the most shocking thing. The most shocking thing and the most dangerous thing and the most important thing to remember is that the confidence in their decision skyrocketed when they had 40 data points versus 5 data points. And what that means is that, and this speaks primarily to confirmation bias, is that they went into their analysis with some sort of assumption. And even if they had an open mind, once they processed the first 3, 4, 5 pieces of information, their mind was already made up. And now each subsequent piece of information either confirmed that or they came up with a reason why it didn't apply to their prediction. They either, their mind already came up with a conclusion, and now every additional data point, all it did was serve to increase their confidence in their prediction. It didn't actually serve in any function to have them questioning their decisions, rethinking things, etc. Which means when you have too much information, it is very dangerous. And I would say one of the most dangerous, deadly things in marketing today is anecdotal data. It's people that have information, they don't understand how to analyze it. They don't understand what it means. Now, this type of bias, you can be aware of it and you're still controlled by it. You don't have control over this. In this intelligence analysis book, he does have a hypothesis, which is actually, that's not the right word, hypothesis, that's the answer. He has a theory, which I agree with, which is the only way to truly root out cognitive biases is to have competing hypotheses going in. That means that you're not looking to confirm a specific assumption. You have multiple competing hypotheses and you don't know which one's important. And then you need to put them out on a piece of paper and weight them and then figure out if different data points move, how the weights and the decisions change. And what's important about this is because you're comparing competing hypotheses, you could use that information to rule out bad information, and you could go ahead and use that to figure out if a data point is actually relevant to the decision. Because if you weight different points in different ways, an example would be if you're buying a car, right? So you might be open to a red car, a blue car, right? So the color of the car might matter to you. Some features in the car might matter to you. The brand might matter to you, right? And you have all these assumptions. When you're evaluating a car, you might not have them all in mind, which is a different point that that book discusses. But you have these different assumptions. And you might think that the color of the car is not so important to you. But if you go ahead and you assign a weighting of 10% to car color, 30% to safety, 50% to a sunroof, etc. And then you look at that on a piece of paper and then you change the weighting to give color 20%, 30%, move safety down from 50 to 30 to 40 or something like that. If your decision doesn't change based on those weightings, that tells you that you had this piece of information that you thought was relevant, and it turns out it's actually not impacting the decision when you think about it logically. And I'm not arguing that you need to make every decision from a logical place. You certainly do not. And sometimes there's things your gut knows that logic just can't support. Your limbic system and your language centers are in different places. Again, I'm not a scientist or a psychologist. I don't know about these things. But what I do know is that a guiding principle that has guided me since day one, which I hope will guide every single episode of this podcast, is recognizing and rooting out bias and always keeping the option open in your mind that maybe you're wrong. Always keeping the option open that there might be another way to see things. And the truth is, most things in life can have sincerely held opinions. There's this famous SEO debate between Google and SEOs about 301 redirects and whether they, you know, decay your rankings or things like that. And we could get into that in a later episode with the technical SEO who could talk about it. But it's interesting that you have these SEOs that have these like opinions that they truly believe are true. And then Google insists that we ran internal data and Google in theory should have the most data about these things. And they have a different answer, but what you're seeing in the real world is different. And what in the world's going on there? And the short answer is sometimes we don't know, and there's room for multiple things to be correct. And we don't know how those tests looked against each other. We don't know what people are seeing. We don't know what biases are influencing them. All we can do is take the best information we have at hand, make the most educated decisions we can, and then move from there. I didn't want this episode to go as long as it is, and I really wanted to talk about myself and my background. I love talking about myself. No, seriously, I want to give you an idea about why you should be listening to this podcast and how I'm hoping to help people. And I don't know if I laid out that foundation clearly here, but I do think I got started, and I think we're in a good place. What I'm hoping you'll get out of this episode and every subsequent episode is a little more clarity about what you need to know, who you can trust, how to know who to trust, how to think about investing in marketing in a way that you mitigate your risk. Think of this podcast as an insurance policy on making costly marketing mistakes. That's my only goal here, is that, you know, I was in Starbucks today and my ears perked up because I heard someone say, we're going to do press releases and articles. I didn't hear the rest of the conversation, but I immediately thought they're talking about SEO. And then I immediately thought to myself, I don't believe press releases has helped in SEO in 6 or 7 years. In the meantime, I know many SEOs today that insist that they work today and they keep on selling it. And the reality is I actually think they don't work. And we could talk about that in an episode with some people that actually know this stuff cold. But my point is that, like, I wanted to just like go to them and say, like, what are you trying to accomplish, right? And give them guidance. And it wasn't my place. And I felt bad because someone might be wasting money. Or they might not be. Like, I don't want that on my shoulders either. So let's use this podcast to get to the bottom of things, to root out bias wherever possible, to maintain an open mind that we might be wrong, and then hopefully be better marketers and see better results and grow our businesses and achieve the things we want to achieve in this world. Marketing can be a very noble profession. You have the ability to influence people in a very positive way. You can leave a mark. Great marketing comes from caring about your customers. And when you care about people, that translates. That there's a real connection there. And that can make a difference in their lives. Like, I realize I'm like putting marketing on a pedestal, and maybe it's because I love it. But I think there's great responsibility that comes with the ability to communicate to the masses. Just look at the fake news problems we had in the last year, and Facebook doing their studies about how certain things you're exposed to are actually bad for your mood, bad for your emotions. There's all sorts of data coming out today about social media and what it does to you long term. And we'll explore some of these things in the future. But my point with all of this is that communicating with people comes with great responsibility. I hope I don't let you down. And I hope that you don't let your customers down. And Hopefully we can all make this world a better place and hopefully enjoy it. You know, what's the point of making the world better if we can't enjoy it? Well, maybe there's a lot of points to it, but it sounded good in my head before I said it. Anyway, I'm David Melamed, and this was the introductory first episode to Marketing Mythbusters. And hopefully we'll crank out these episodes. I'm hoping to do one a week. And then maybe if I have time here and there, I'll sprinkle in a nugget, like if there's some interesting news, I'll throw up a short episode or something. Probably not. I don't know. We'll see. But my goal is to publish one episode a week, and hopefully we hit that goal. Thank you so much for tuning in, and have a wonderful, wonderful day.
Thanks for listening to the Marketing Mythbusters podcast, the voice above the crowd. Please visit marketingmythbusters.fm for show notes, key takeaways, as well as more episodes. And of course, if you know someone who can benefit from the Marketing Mythbusters show, please share it with them. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to seeing you next time.